need a conversion of the heart. We need that kind of spiritual and emotional change in individuals and then writ large in our culture. Without that, we can continue to change policies here and there, but the underlying problem is the hatred itself.
It's easy to talk about the successes, but what doesn't get talked about enough is the struggle. My name is Eric Weinmayer. I've gotten the chance to ascend Mount Everest, to climb the tallest mountain in every continent, to kayak the Grand Canyon, and I happen to be blind. It's been a struggle to live what I call a no-barriers life, to define it, to push the parameters of what it means. And part of the equation is diving into the learning process and trying to illuminate the universal elements that exist along the way. And that unexplored terrain between those dark places we find ourselves in and the summit exists a map. That map, that way forward, is what we call no barriers.
Cyrus Habib was elected Washington State's 16th Lieutenant Governor in November of 2016 at the age of 35. As Lieutenant Governor, he's the President of the State Senate, serves as acting governor whenever Governor Inslee leaves the state, and oversees an agency whose key issues include economic development, trade, and higher education. A three-time cancer survivor, Lieutenant Governor Habib has been fully blind since the age of 8. His parents immigrated to the U.S. from Iran before he was born and is the first and only Iranian-American to hold statewide elected office in the United States. This guy is amazingly fascinated. You're going to enjoy this one.
Cyrus, you've had this meteoric rise. I mean, I don't mean to like embarrass you, but it's pretty amazing. Rhodes Scholar and Columbia and Yale and you were the Democratic whip of the state Senate, I believe. I mean, so being blind, let me start with the obvious. Like, what kind of pioneering stuff have you had to adapt in the world of politics as a blind person?
There are things that are obviously harder for me to do because I'm blind, unlike being Iranian American, where if someone has thoughts about my abilities, it's just rooted in ignorance. There are actually legitimate things that need to be adapted. So,
by the way, Cyrus, I know exactly what you're saying. Like, I'm totally connecting because when I was in college, I tried to get a job as a dishwasher. I thought, okay, that's a job I can handle. Nobody would give me a job. Everyone had a different reason. But the point being that I didn't know whether I could do it either because nobody would give me a chance to either prove it otherwise or prove
right.
them wrong. Like, so I still to this day don't know whether I could have succeeded in that job. So I hear what you're saying.
I've been to your house and your apartment and you can't be gifted, so.
Yeah, right. I think with the sample size of 2, I think it's fair to say that we don't make great dishwashers. I'm willing to sign on to that.
You climbed Kilimanjaro last year. It was your brainstorm and it was partly, well, you can tell us the whole story, your motivation to do it, but there's a really cool motivation behind it. And as a result of climbing Kilimanjaro, you raise a lot of money and a lot of attention for a very cool program called Boundless Washington.
So we wanted to create some kind of a leadership program for kids with disabilities in our state. I'd found kind of this passion of mine was to create youth leadership programs. And I really, really wanted to do one for kids with disabilities because I identified a problem we have, which is that we don't have kind of a bench of people who are ready to go and be champions for our communities of people with disabilities in the way that you find among other underrepresented groups. We really don't have that. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. And so that was on my mind. And so it just kind of came together. What if I do something? What if I do a climb? What if I push myself? And I use that to kind of be the launching pad for this program, which would also be about the outdoors, which is important for us in Washington State, and get, you know, kind of create an opportunity for young people to get leadership through the outdoors. Kilimanjaro had always kind of held this place in my imagination. I also knew that Kilimanjaro was a climb that you could do without technical training. And so that's how it came together. I'm going to climb Kilimanjaro. We're going to use the money to raise money and awareness for an outdoor leadership program for kids with disabilities. And then we said, okay, well, we don't know anything about providing outdoor leadership programs for kids with disabilities, so we better find people who do. And so we started with No Barriers, because that's already something that you all do.
And Jeff may not even know this, but PV, Jeff, yep. I don't think he knows this, PV wound up leading Cyrus and his group up Kilimanjaro. So Cyrus got to hang out with the infamous Pasquale.
I got the real experience.
And he was the guy who led our Everest expedition way back in 2001.
You know, you couldn't ask for a better person to accompany someone who's blind. The morning of the summit was the most brutal 4 or 5 hours I've ever experienced. So it started out, you know, you're climbing in the middle of the night, it's cold, it's the last stretch. It started out that every 5 minutes I needed to stop and just catch my breath. Then it was every minute. Then it was every 10 steps. And if I sat down, I would start coughing insanely, like to the point that I thought my ribs would crack. So I was like, I can't sit down, but I would just be doubled over panting. And I was like, you know, honest to God, I was like, am I going to be able to do this? But there was also, I think, a noble instinct in there somewhere in there, which was, I don't want to let down the kids that I'm asking to push themselves. I want to have credibility with them. And I don't want to let down other people out there who may think of doing this themselves. I did carry on. And I'd said to Pasquale before, like a couple days earlier, I said, look, no matter what, I need to make it to the top of this mountain. The most kind of crackling, sparkling form of fuel and motivation comes when you feel like you're doing something for someone else.
Good job. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
How many kids are in the Boundless, the first program?
We got 9 kids in this first cohort with all different physical and sensory disabilities. They're just amazing. They were kind of asked, what do you want to get out of this? And overwhelmingly, the answers were like, how to be an advocate for myself.
So I know you've been asked this a ton, but you're a 3-time cancer survivor. And you also, I think you went blind at 8 years old.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I get to turn the tides and ask you about, you know, that process of going blind. And, you know, does that change you? Does that like make you more of who you might be?
My parents really did a phenomenal job of shielding me from the trauma of it. You know, I have memories, of course, I have unpleasant memories of going to the hospital and being hooked up to an IV and getting chemo and surgeries and, you know, all those kinds of things that are very unpleasant memories from my childhood. But they are, they're really quite few relative to you asked me, what was your childhood like? It's really a bunch of positive, pleasant memories. And so I was just really, really lucky in that sense. Long before I knew about you, long before I'd met PV, you know, there was my mom, you know, her teaching me to take risks and that it was okay for me to take risks. In fact, it was important for me not to be overly coddled, and then also how to advocate for myself. That was what I was taught. And that is really the most critical part of how I got to win statewide elected office and all the rest of it. At the same time, what I've come to understand in recent years is that you can take that too far. And there is a way in which, whether it's the mountain, whether it's cancer, whether it's the death of a loved one, you know, like I, you know, yesterday was Father's Day, so I was missing my father, whom I lost to cancer 3 years ago. There are challenges and obstacles that you cannot litigate your way through or muscle your way through. Or power your way through. You might and you will overcome those obstacles, but in doing so, I actually think you need to confront your own weakness and vulnerability. And that was something that I was so eager to suppress because I was so eager to to show strength.
Well, I find what you're saying super fascinating. Is that sort of partly why you decided, I think it's public, right, that you're not going to run for office again, that you're going to become a Jesuit priest. Is that part of that? Like, hey, maybe I need to take a different course in life and, you know, maybe be a little more vulnerable, a little more contemplative? Or
I do really strongly feel that this is what I'm meant to do. The challenge our country faces right now is upstream from politics. Politics are the downstream. The politics we have are the downstream consequence of a spiritual and cultural and social dysfunction that exists right now. A real lack of compassion, a deficit of understanding, and a growth of tribalism then has mapped onto political identities. And so even just laying aside the personal kind of desire I have to serve in this way, I also think that for the kinds of public service that I got into politics to do, in order for that to work, I've now realized we actually need people of goodwill to work upstream from all that, to guide the society, hopefully in a direction that is conducive to increased social justice, economic and racial justice, environmental stewardship, and taking care of one another.
You've realized that you can create more positive impact in the world through this new mission of yours as it stacks up against being a lieutenant governor, perhaps even the governor of a state and maybe even higher office. And is that a good assessment?
What we need, either at the individualized level or at the cultural level, is the Greek word is metanoia. We need a conversion of the heart. We need that kind of spiritual and emotional change in individuals and then writ large in our culture. And so I have determined that that is more important. Without that, we can continue to change policies here and there, but the underlying problem that really, really is what we hate. What we really hate is the racism, the hatred itself. You know, that's what we can't stand. And so to get to the heart of the matter, I think we need people to serve in this way and in this fashion. And I think that embedded in your question, I think is kind of this, and you asked it quite neutrally, so I don't, maybe you weren't insinuating this, but I think that many people kind of insinuate, isn't it better to do things at scale? You know, and we kind of have an obsession in our society. It's wrapped up with how our economy works, that everything has to be scalable and has to grow and has to be bigger. And the bigger the thing, the bigger the impact, the better the good is. And I guess I would just question that. There's definitely a time for scale, but, you know, George Floyd was not a famous person. He was not a person who any of us would have ever expected to change the course of history. And yet, through his death, through a seemingly insignificant, unknown person dying somewhere, from a police officer who nobody knew either, you know, that one act will have changed history.
Well, Cyrus, that's like a really coherent, but, I'm glad I heard you say all that, because it's a, like this really cool counterintuitive course that you're taking. But when you lay it out in that way, it makes perfect sense, you know, instead of being an external leader, kind of shifting more with what society is looking for at that moment, you're getting to the source of these things, the source, you know, which is the heart, which is the spirit. And
that's right.
That's really, really cool. And I bet really illuminating for people to know that they have that power to shift in their lives in a pretty dramatic way. Well, thank you, Cyrus, so much. And really, it's like such a privilege.
Thank you for your friendship and your mentorship to me and to countless others.
Jeff, what did you take away from that?
Well, you know, clearly Cyrus is probably one of the more interesting people that I think any of us have been introduced to in recent memory. I mean, this guy's he's just got such an amazing story. Every single step of the way has been amazing, and he's clearly shown courage and resiliency through it all. And I would say, maybe not even right to say it, but I feel like the most courageous thing that he's doing is what he's about to embark on now. It seems like the culmination of everything he's done. You know, he's got such a successful career, what people would consider a really amazing position right now, and something he could really build on. And in a way he is, but he's doing it in an unconventional way. The courage and the bravery that it takes for him to sort of step back and listen to his spirit and his soul and what's calling him. Clearly, there had to have been a place where he felt a little disenchanted or maybe even disenfranchised from the political scheme and platform that he has right now. But you know, I applaud him for finding a way to be able to redirect and still create amazing impact. What about you, Eric?
Yeah, I totally agree. Cyrus was on this track. And when you get on a track, and I imagine the desperation of going blind and, you know, the fear that you're not going to be able to achieve all your dreams, and then you persevere, right? You're a Rhodes Scholar and you go to an Ivy League school, get a law degree and actually get elected into office, and you're on this incredible trajectory, possibly to become the first blind governor of Washington State. And you turn inward. And this is what we preach at No Barriers all the time, this idea of vision, right? You turn inward and you say, hey, this course does not feel right for me. You know, I'm tapping into what purpose means to me, and it's not right. And I think I can have a bigger impact closer to the source, right? Really getting and changing people's hearts and their spiritual lives. And I think that's going to have a bigger impact on the world. But that is a very counterintuitive decision. And I think that's a good thing to point out in this No Barriers journey, is that you don't just get on a track and just keep rolling forward and get a lot of recognition and acclaim and say, okay, this is my destiny. No, you know, you can change course at any time. You can say, hey, you know what, I'm going to shift. But that really does take, you know, not just being in touch with the external rewards of and recognition, but really tapping into that vision. So good job, Cyrus. You really are an amazing representative of having vision. Pardon the pun, I guess. Thanks again, everybody. Thank you to Wells Fargo and Prudential for all the community listening out there. If you guys like No Barriers and support our mission, we'll support the companies that support us. Thank you, guys. No Barriers.
Production team behind this podcast includes senior producer Pauline Schaefer, executive producer Diedrich Jonk, sound design, editing, and mixing by Tyler Kottman, graphics by Sam Davis, and marketing support by Megan Lee and Carly Sandsmark. Special thanks to the Dan Ryan Band for our intro song, Guidance. And thanks to all of you for listening. We know that you've got a lot of choices about how you can spend your time, and we appreciate you spending it with us. If you enjoy this podcast, we encourage you to subscribe to it, share it, and give us a review. Show notes can be found at nobarrierspodcast.com.